Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to AnCast. We are back from our hiatus. Happy 2011. And before we get to our panel chat, I just wanted to mention it is winter preview time, so make sure you check out the front page. All this week and next week, up through about the 14th, I think, we're going to be running the winter preview guide. So make sure you check that out. And without further ado, our panel chat. Okay, we're back. Our panel this week to talk about all things Moe. First up joining me is a friend of the show, columnist for ANN. You know this guy. Everybody knows this guy. Mike Toole. Hey, Mike.
Never heard of him.
All right. Yes, very funny. Okay. Also joining us is Hope Chapman, who writes for us, and you can find her on thatguywithglasses.com and at d2brigade.net, right?
Yes. Hello, Hope. Everyone.
Thanks for coming on. And our very special guest, I was very glad to get this guy on the show, especially for this panel. You can read his webcomic at its mistakesofyouth.blogspot.com, I believe.
No, it's actually just mistakesofyouth.com.
Mistakesofyouth.com. Okay, so yes. I was wrong. Mistakesofyouth.com, he's got a webcomic there. You know him probably as Wild Arms Hero, but we are referring to him for the purposes of this program as simply Greg. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Yo, also I have another website which I just started called Analog Hoso, so you should all check that out. Shameless plug.
Okay.
All right.
I'll allow you that plug. Okay, so right up top, I think it's important, because this is obviously a hot-button issue, something, you know, sort of rabidly debated around corners of the internet that, you know, little pockets of anime fans raging about this, you know, especially on Anime News Network sometimes. But Moe is really an anomaly. It's difficult to pin down, and I've never seen people unanimously agree on a single definition of what it is. So what I'd like to do, starting with Mike, what is your definition of Moe?
Well, to describe it, I'll use a quote that I'm fond of pulling out. And the quote goes, "I first fell in love with animation when I saw Hakujaden, The Tale of the White Serpent, the animated feature produced by Toei Animation in 1958. I can still remember the pangs of emotion I felt at the sight of the incredibly beautiful young female character by Niang, and how I went to see the film over and over as a result. It was like being in love. And Bai Niang became a surrogate girlfriend for me at a time when I had none." That feeling to me is a very Moe thing, and that quote is from Hayao Miyazaki. Happy birthday to him.
Right. Okay. Interesting. And Hope, what about you?
Well, I'd separate into two things, which is Moe, what you can, you know, have a complex over, which is pretty much anything. If I have to get Moe over characters, it's usually either characters from Ouran or Bakano, because I have a lot of camaraderie with girls that come over, you know, we watch the shows and we get excited over, you know, Jacuzzi Splot being all badass or something, that kind of thing. So you have, like, a squealing, protective reaction over something that's not just, you know, it's like an overwhelming urge to make that thing, you know, appear more or have a... I don't know. It's a weird, you know, squealy fangirly love over something, or a fanboy-y love, I suppose, which is not something I have as much ease grasping. And then there's the Moe that I use that is probably erroneous, but it's just the only word I have for it, which is the kind I'm not as crazy about. And that's, I guess, a genre that the closest thing I can correlate to in Western terms is sort of a soap. It's a combination between like a Disney Channel sitcom and a Lifetime drama. It's something that's really emotionally manipulative to the otaku subculture in general. And there's a lot of different stipulations as to what it entails. But, you know, the big obvious dumb examples are Kanon and Air and that kind of thing. So I have two definitions, and I guess I'll, you know, it depends on which one I'm talking about.
Okay, and Greg, you're sort of the go-to guy for this. What's your definition?
Go-to guy, huh? Well, oh gosh. Well, Moe, I think at this point Moe is a gigantic lie, and I'll tell you why. Because, like, everyone, like, I guess the default definition of moe is like, oh, this feeling of protection for this character that I like, and it's completely pure and it's not sexual at all, right? And so, but then you go around Japan and you're like outside of pachinko parlors and there's like these like banners that say moe moe corner with all these girls like puckering up to kiss you. Like, that's not sexual. It's like, it seems kind of sexual. And then, you know, you go to Toranoana and there's like all the doujinshi and stuff. So I think at this point it's just like some sort of weird commercial like buzzword that's just used to sort of describe this like very specific sort of style of character and character design and style of storytelling. But it's like, I think it's sort of completely gone off what it actually originally meant when whoever that smart guy was who coined the phrase. So that's what I think moe is.
Interesting. Yeah,
what's interesting to me is that Ken Akamatsu, the Love Hina guy, he a few years ago said that he believes that moe is necessarily non-sexual. It's more of a filial concept. I wonder if it'd still say that today.
Yeah.
I think you could have defended that 7 years ago. I don't think you can defend it now. Yeah. I think it's changed. Personally, I think you can boil moe down to, you can call it whatever you want, a genre, you can call it a series of tropes, personality traits. No matter which way you slice it, I just call it fake girlfriend. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Fake boyfriend.
Or fake boyfriend.
You can feel moe over, you know, Honey Senpai or Jacuzzi's Blood again is kind of the one that me and my friends have that giggly thing over, I guess.
Right, right.
I can feel moe over Jacuzzi's Blood. He's pretty moe.
Isn't he cute?
Interesting. Okay, so I guess we're sort of positing this on the fact that it's changed dramatically over the last 7 years. Do you think that it's been perverted over time? Do you think it started out as something pure and slowly just as a matter of course became more and more sexualized?
Well, if you don't mind me speaking first,
go ahead.
As you know, Mike mentioned in his opening quote, and also Matt Alt mentioned this in some podcast he did for Neo Japanese, that moe's been around forever. So like, it's not just a recent thing. So, and I think it's always, there's always been like this fascination because like they're nerds with like female characters and it's always been sexual. So I don't think it's been perverted. I just think it's gotten to the point where like that initial just definition, when people gave it a word, moe, like I think maybe that's just sort of just crumbled and died somewhere. Yeah. So yeah, I guess it's what you, as you said, but yeah.
Well, Rei, right? I mean, like that's always been hypersexualized, but that Rei phenomenon, you know, and Eva, because she's this, you know, she's a woman, but she's a doll, but she's a, well, you know, whatever. Right. That goes all sorts of creepy places. But I think, I mean, people always use that word as soon as it was kind of a phenomenon to describe her in particular. So, I mean, when was that not ever sexualized?
Well, I believe the term that was initially used for Rei, I don't know if it's a New Type magazine thing or if it was Gainax themselves, they referred to her as the premium girl.
And the what girl? The premium girl?
Premium girl, yeah. And it's like ever since then, every single series with some sort of female cast in it had to have the premium girl, like the one that's kind of quiet and pale and standoffish and maybe a little vulnerable.
I remember first hearing about this back when I was watching Cardcaptor Sakura on like fansub VHS back in the day. And I remember, to my horror at the time, discovering the mountain of porn that existed for Cardcaptor Sakura. At the time, my brain hadn't been broken yet. That was a new concept to me, that people would sexualize a, you know, girl who looks like she's 10. You know, this was 97 or 98 or so, to that extent. And that's when I first discovered the word moe, and, you know, it was something that didn't really come back around until, you know, the explosion of Kyoto Animation stuff. That I didn't hear it again until then, but that was the first time I think I really became familiar with the concept of people having protective, sistery sort of feeling, little sister feelings towards an animated character, 10-year-old, 12-year-old animated character that eventually became sexual. That's sort
of
the first time.
You're exactly right about that, Zach, because I'm sure at the very least Greg knows about the Sci-Fi contest every year.
Uh-huh. Wait, Samoa?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The first winner, that's the contest by basically a voting contest by 2chan.
Yep.
Or Chando, whatever you want to call it.
Didn't Taiga from Toradora win 1 year? I didn't quite get that. She's not
last
the,
year.
The archetype.
The inaugural winner was Sakura from Cardcaptor Sakura back in 2000.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. For the year, it's always been kind of a little girly character. Like, one year it was one of the chicks from Rosen Maiden. One year it was one of the girls from Higurashi.
It was Tsundere is one of though, isn't it? I mean, isn't that a bit of a base breaker as far as what the ultimate ideal of moe might be?
Hang on, go ahead, Greg.
Tsundere is completely moe because eventually she she sort of loosens up and says, right. No, I actually really, really like you. Yeah. And you have to sort of get through all that, and then it's like, ah, yes, payoff. But of course, if you watch Lucky Star, you'll know that the payoff now is in people's heads and that tsundere are just all tsun and no dere at all.
Of course.
And when you say that, you mean tsun means bitch and dere means wants to bone you, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay,
yeah.
That's the difference. That's what I've sort of noticed. So before we get into the tropes itself, whether or not it's good or bad, what are some of the... Because I have a reputation for not liking moe stuff. I never really have. But that doesn't mean I've never...
That's so surprising.
Yeah, I know. Shocker. But that doesn't mean I've never seen good examples of it. Speaking of, as a genre, it's not like I've never seen a good moe show. So what I kind of want to get is everyone's favorite show that sort of wallowed in these tropes or really used them effectively. I guess, Greg, let's start with you. What are your favorites?
Oh, my favorites? Well, my favorites are probably things everyone would hate, but I really like Tsukiyomi Moon Phase, even though that's pretty lolicon, not so much moe, I guess. I like Gunslinger Girl. I'm just, like, looking at my shelf over here. Kamichu, Suzumiya Haruhi no Yutsu, that's a great one too. So those are a couple off the top of my head that I think are they really knock it out of the park. But I'm kind of a weird guy and I like weird things, so
maybe just at the time I really wasn't paying attention, but I didn't realize Kamichu was moe.
Kamichu's pretty goddamn moe.
I haven't seen it since it came out,
if you watch the whole thing, the camera occasionally just likes the girls a little too much, but it's an abundantly clever little show. I think it's cool too.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Strike Witches. I forgot that. There we go.
that is the cash cow. Yeah,
icing on the cake.
Right, and Hope. What about you?
Again, maybe my definition of moe is a little different. I had trouble nailing down Gunslinger Girl as moe because I enjoyed it, but I like. It almost feels like there's no effort at all to actually sexualize or even like, oh, they're so cute. They're real little girls inside. It almost seems like it wants to kick that in the teeth repeatedly with a big blunt object. So I don't know. I mean, but then again, I've seen the pillows and stuff. So I know some people take it that way, but
I think it's like sophisticated moe. It's like fine wine.
I don't know what it is. It's like, okay. It's like the source material itself is not. It really, I mean, you can try to scrape and dig, and I just don't see any little bit that he tries to give you that you could take that way.
That guy has drawn doujinshi of his own characters, so.
Oh, God, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just going by the anime. I've never read the manga or anything, so I'm just going by the anime.
Gunslinger Girl is an example of a show that has moe qualities just because of the character designs.
Yeah.
It's not validated by the narrative, really. There's not really any fan service in that show. I know a lot of people who really hate moe stuff and love Gunslinger Girl. I think you can assign moe traits to that show just to the character designs.
Yeah, and that's pretty true.
Anything else?
I basically forgave Kyo Annie for everything that they have ever made. Well, not counting Haruhi Suzumiya, which is kind of a breed unto itself. It's like if Ouran kind of does to reverse harem what Haruhi does to moe. It's like, well, we know what this is, and we're just going to celebrate it while beating the snot out at the same time. But Angel Beats was the newest, I guess, effort they've put out. And
Angel Beats isn't Kyoto Animation. That's PA Works, just to...
It's Key. I'm mixing up things in my brain. It's Key. It's not Kyo Annie, but you just kind of marry those sometimes. It takes all the tropes, like all the, well, this is unnecessarily supernatural. Well, this person is this trope and this girl is this trope and there's fan service, but it actually works. And I was happy and I kind of forgave them for all the air, the canon, the clan ad, the EF, you know, I don't know. It just seems
also F isn't by Key. Just sorry to interrupt you. That's by another company.
Okay. Sorry. I have my specific errands on some of this. I'm going by tropes, but, yeah, I mean, Angel Beats is pretty genuinely enjoyable. It has its pitfalls. It's really manipulative sometimes, but it's not annoyingly so. It doesn't have plot holes all over it. So
interesting. Okay, and Mike, what about you?
Well, I just finished watching the second season, so I'll start by saying I do enjoy Haruhi Suzumiya. I think it's sometimes a little too clever for its own good. The characters, stereotypes. But I like Haruhi herself. She's just so unashamedly weird. And season two has, you know, has that interminable little bit in the middle where they keep doing the same episode over and over again. But the last arc is kind of great because it shows, you know, this character who's just been built up as this, you know, supremely brash, confident girl just basically fall apart. And it's interesting to see. Another one is Elfenlied, which I think of as just this absolutely vicious parody of the whole moe genre conventions. You know, you have a mystery girl who is really, you know, dumb but pliant and friendly, a devoted childhood friend, a crippled girl, and a weak little sister type. And they all have this mutation that turns their hair pink and gives them these adorable little lumhorns. And they're all murderous psychic mutants.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would point to Haruhi Suzumiya as a quality example. Although, while I really did enjoy that show, my chief criticism of it was that it was pretending to be satire.
It's not really.
It's
It sounds like a big celebration. Satire. I don't think there's anything satirical about it at all, really. I think it's a straight-up science fiction show.
Well, to be satire, you kind of have to take... And it really helps if it's something bad or mean-spirited that you're lampooning, but you have to take the qualities of something that you're parodying or calling out and then first call them out and then, like, you know, twist or change them and then say, well, this is why this doesn't work or this is why this needs to be fixed or whatever, or isn't this silly? Haruhi doesn't do that. It's like, look at this. Okay, we like it too. Let's revel in it for a little bit. So it's like a big party or celebration of all the tropes rather than a satire.
Yeah, I think it's very honest about itself. It's just, you know, very well put together and well packaged. You know.
At the time, I mean, I'll defend my reaction to it as pretending to be satire. At the time when it came out, it was sort of the first show that was attempting to be meta about its moe tropes, and it felt very much like they were calling this stuff out and pointing out how shallow it is, and sort of also doing it, you know, like Hope said, wallowing in it at the same time. I mean, to me, that very much was, this is an attempt at satirizing the cliches of a genre, but it just sort of fell into them over and over and over again and kept perpetuating them. That's how I interpreted the series. Now,
so
I haven't seen it.
Are you talking about Kyon's narration? Is that the main thing that made you think it was satire?
Kyon's narration?
Because I can understand that if that's the case.
Absolutely, Kyon's narration and Haruhi herself saying, like, oh, people fall for this shit, let's do it. if that's not trying to satirize those cliches, I don't know what is.
Yeah, remember, there's an episode where she explicitly explains what moe is supposed to be and why people will fall for it, and then she goes and does it. She dresses Mikuru up in the bunny costume, and off they go.
Yeah, so that's why my reaction was the way it was, and the fact that the show kept just doing it and saying, like, calling it out and then just doing it, that to me was like, okay, well, you're not really taking this apart, are you? But I still really, I mean, after a while that calmed down, and I did really enjoy the show. But that's kind of one of the only examples that I can really point to personally. I think I find moe cliche, moe genre tropes to be incredibly distracting, to the point where they remove enjoyment from a show for me when they're in there. It bothers me when I see them. And I get the sense that there are people like me who are repelled by these elements. And then there's a whole subculture of people who are specifically drawn to them. And I think it's two different kinds of fans. Now, I'm not sure, you know, if any of you would agree with me, but Greg, would you agree with the concept that moe fandom is kind of its own thing?
Oh, it is completely its own thing. And actually, they kind of bother me. Like, the fans themselves kind of bother me themselves.
Okay.
Because, as you mentioned, like, there's sort of this very specific sort of set of tropes and characteristics and all that, and people get sort of very, like, they have, like, a checklist when they're watching, like, oh, man, show has to have this, this, and this, and all right, that's a good show. And I think that that approach to sort of consuming and making shows has actually hurt some things, and that's why, and, like, okay, well, so what I'm trying to say is that I think it hurts things when people are just trying to conform to this sort of set list of things they got to get done. And I think the good moe shows are ones that sort of just prioritize just making something entertaining within that sort of framework of the genre or tropes or whatever of moe.
Okay.
That wasn't too much of a tangent, was it?
No, no, that answers my question. But in terms of the subculture, so you're saying that it really has become this mechanical thing where they're not really looking for any sort of qualities other than this checklist of it has this type of girl, this type of girl, this type of girl.
Yeah, I think fans are way too much, like, because a lot of them, like, if you talk to a lot of, at least in the U.S., a lot of them are, like, you know, computer programmers and, like, stuff like that. And so the way they think about things is they're always like, all right, it has to have this, this, and this. So if it has these sort of, like, qualities, then we have a good thing. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. It needs to have, like, strong characters, strong story, da-da-da-da-da, or whatever. And I just, and yeah, so I think, and I think right. sort of moe anime has been around to the point where, like, that's what it's just sort of evolved into.
Interesting. Mike, you go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, but Greg, what about the beach episode?
Oh, what about the beach? And the hot spring. I love how they have to have a beach and a hot spring. And it's like, we had to have a reason to go to both of these incredibly similar places in the same, you know, 5-episode span.
That's the reward, hope, though. I mean, if you look at some of these shows, they're spaced out very carefully. So, you know, you got to put in a few episodes. And then you get an episode like that.
And I hate to keep mentioning Ouran, but it just reminds me a lot of it. I mean, Ouran is the female equivalent of a Haruhi Suzumiya for reverse harem or whatever. So, I mean, you have that same thing of, I don't like fans of this. It's like, you know, the yaoi fandom, the reverse harem fandom. But you can still have good examples. And sorry, the reason I originally said that was... their excuse for having the beach episode right next to like the hot spring episode was they try to entertain Haruhi by taking her to one and she says, I hate this place. Like, what's wrong with you? I hate this. And then they have a reason to go to the beach because she says, no, I like the beach. They're like, oh, okay, well, let's do that. So they put it right back to back. And I think they actually say, well, they always put them in the same span in the anime anyway, because they don't have a fourth wall in Ouran.
Didn't Gunslinger Girl eventually have a beach episode?
Did it? No,
it
not.
Headed an OVA into Ultra
the Tia second Trino, season one, okay.
And it wasn't even a beach episode. It's like the last 2 minutes showed them going to a beach, and it ended.
Okay,
I only watched the first season because that's the only one I acknowledge that exists. So,
okay, interesting. Okay, so that's a very interesting phenomenon then that they're definitely it's like rather than creating a story or creating a narrative work, it's more like putting a car together.
I think that's, but you can say that for like everything. Like when you make an action movie, it has to have, you know, an exploding car and, you know, a guy punching another guy out. Or when you have a romantic comedy, you need to have this and that. So I think it's just like the same as any other genre. It's just like the ones that, like, you know, where the people are really trying to hit it out of the park. Those are the good ones. But see, the thing is, like, I guess when fans of romantic comedies and like action movies, like, I don't think they have that checklist in their head. It just sort of, when those things happen, they're like, oh yeah, that's cool. But like moe fans, since they're like really nerdy, they like have that in their head before it starts. They're like, okay, waiting for a twin-tailed tsundere. All right, she comes to that 5-minute mark. All right, here we go.
The show is great.
And if the girls are cute enough, and if there's a little bit of fan service here and there, then a lot of the fans of this stuff will forgive terrible writing and, you know, inconsistent animation and just bad pacing and plotting.
But at the same time, I mean, as much as I want to say, like, oh, their taste is just in the shitter, because all that has to happen is a girl with pigtails who acts like a bitch shows up 7 minutes in and they like the show and they'll defend the show. But they're enjoying it in a completely different way that I am. Like, I'm looking for something totally different than they are. And so that's, I think, where the obvious rift is, the obvious divide is. They don't really care about the same things that I care about. They want this particular trait or this particular thing. And so rather than looking at it from a quality standpoint, I mean, it's hard not to argue, like, well, I actually want a decent script. Isn't that better than just wanting a girl with pigtails? But they're looking for something totally different. It's a completely different way of watching the show.
There's what was it? I mean, there are some things like a canon where you can break it down literally into, like, there are 3 or 4 episodes about a character. There are 3 or 4 episodes about completely different characters that everything else up to that point hadn't existed. And then it goes away. And then it goes away. And so you know that those 3 or 4 episodes, like, every arc has its own fans that, like, they like that girl, they'll watch those episodes. And you can almost make that a miniseries. And then there's something like, and that you think that's bad, and then you reach new peaks with something like Mayoi Neko Overrun, I think it's called.
Oof.
Yeah, where one episode, everything just, there was no, I don't, like, it wasn't like there's a partial narrative and it falls apart and it's bad. There was no narrative. I didn't know what was going on. It was a huge tumult of, here's a cat girl, here's a tsundere, here's a cosplay nut, here's a, and it had no plot, no nothing. Like, the dialogue didn't, it was one of those things where somebody says something and then the person that has the next line says a line that doesn't have anything to do with what the other person said. Like, each little bit of dialogue was written by a separate person, and they just, it was, And, you know, I guess, like, somebody who likes the pigtail girl is just watching for the pigtail girl's lines, because everyone else's don't match up with what she's talking about.
Very confusing. I can't speak for Mayoi Neko Overrun, since I have not watched it, but as for canon, as you know, that was based off of a visual novel, so what they're doing is just sort of doing the best they can to sort of take all those discrete routes.
The multiple endings, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, in the game, that's just one story, and then you do the next one. And so in the anime, it's like one straight thing. But with some of those shows now, they're making it so that each arc is its complete own thing, and each time it resets. So with canon, it's like there's this idea that it's this guy's life, and it just keeps going on. But in like Amagami SS, which I haven't watched, but I hear that each arc is its own thing, and it resets each arc with a different girl.
They do a Higurashi thing.
So they're working their way around it somehow.
So they're creating. That's actually kind of interesting. Is like maybe a little further down the road, it'll just be structured like anime Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah, to say that's the way it should be done, really, if that's what the fans want. But that's what they're getting in the visual novel anyway, so maybe it would be redundant. Like, it seems like the ultimate, I can't believe I'm saying this, it seems like the ultimate right way to do it. It's in the best example is in a horrible show called School Days.
Come on, that's a great show.
People love that show.
It has an ending that I can watch over and over, but it's a terrible show. They take all the multiple endings with multiple girls you can get and just kind of work them into one solid story thread. And as many problems as it had and as abhorrent as every single character was, it made sense. There wasn't like huge leaps of logic. There wasn't supernatural mythos breakdown clashing with each other in the same story thread. It all made sense and it all came together. Too bad all the characters were horrible people and it was very hard to watch. But
well, the way I think about School Days, this is kind of off on a tangent, but School Days is like the harem situation if it actually happened in real life. What if all these girls...
Say, do you think that was intentional? Do you think that was a satire? Or do you think... Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's based off a game which is notorious for its bad endings, but the way it's like... If there was a real harem situation in real life and all these girls inexplicably like this completely boring, asshole-ish guy, then he really would just have sex with all of them. And as a result of having sex with all of them, he'd come off as, like, a real jerk, and then he'd end up dead at the hands of the crazy one. And that's why I like that show.
Okay, so this different mode of consumption, I think it's damaged anime. And that's only because it sells. And so everybody hopped on this train, churned out a bunch of pretty low-quality shows, insert these personality types into everything just because they think it might make a buck. I think it's really damaged anime as a medium. What do you guys think, starting with... Let's start with Mike on this.
Well, it's killing me. I read this post on... it was translated from 2Channel, and it basically had this theory of, well, there's two types of anime fans, and one type is into good characterization and good story, and they want something complex and challenging. And type two is the moe fan that just, you know, they want the characters. They want the kinds of characters that they like, so they can get their bit of romance and their bit of fan service, and the characters are cute. And that's the moe thing to me. I think it's kind of a genre or a set of tropes that more than anything else has enabled just bad storytelling. Like, its fans will forgive gaping plot holes, weak animation, and just, you know, endless goofiness as long as the characters are cute and they get that romantic feeling. You know, it takes shortcuts, and there's a lot of shows, they don't live in the memory very well. I mean, there's one or two every season that are pretty good, but a few years down the road, do you think anyone is going to remember Gion Riders or Sister Princess or Makademi wa Shoi?
No.
It can't really exist on its own without the fandom is the problem. And it's like, it's not the exact same thing that we're doing in the West, but it's almost the same problem as what Hollywood is doing with franchising, where it's like, well, since I just saw this awful thing, well, these people love Avatar The Last Airbender. They'll come see the movie no matter how good or bad it is. Everyone grew up with Yogi Bear. We can make Yogi Bear into a movie and they'll come see it. You know, it's the same thing. It's just, it's pandering to a very specific fandom instead of what we in America are doing, which is how many fandoms can we attract with a different, you know, kind of movie or sequels or whatever.
Okay, but these are both, what you're describing are both symptoms of the same problem, which is money. The only thing that they can make a buck on in Hollywood is Yogi Bear or The Last Airbender or something that has brand name recognition. Original IP is incredibly hard to launch. The last original movie based on an original idea that made a lot of money was Inception, and that was totally the exception to the rule. And Moe is the same thing. I mean, we had a guy on this podcast explain it makes money, so that's why people do it.
Star Driver right now is airing. I could be totally wrong. I don't think it's based
on anything. It's not based on anything. It's original. Mm-hmm. It's a media mix project.
And it's, the director of Soul Eater, so it has all the visual, which that's all Soul Eater had, was the visual wow and the flair and the great cinematic angles and timing. And it's got writers from Utena who have all that great, you know, subversive, fun, sexual, you know, play on the whole genre conventions of mecha now instead of shoujo, which it was in Utena. And it's so great. And I've heard the ratings are terrible in Japan. I mean, it's not based on anything. And it doesn't really have a whole lot of things to pull from besides maybe mecha, but it's a girly mech. Like, the whole point is that the main mech is a big girl. So I don't know how attractive that would be to watch.
Well, I think with Star Driver, this is also going off a tangent, I think they're trying to tap into like a Code Geass sort of thing, but I think they sort of missed the mark.
Gurren Lagann is what it reminds me of, but it doesn't work because it's not the same. Visually, it's the same draw as Gurren Lagann, but narratively, it's not.
Well, so Greg, what do you think the relying on Moe as a crutch, do you think it's harmed anime as a medium creatively?
Okay, that was the question, wasn't it?
Yes.
First let me just preface this saying that I am a Moe fan. I will watch things just because I like specific characters, but the one thing your show has to do is sort of move me emotionally. And I don't know, maybe because I'm a weird guy and girls running around their underwear moves me emotionally. But I do think that what you've said about like Moe, I think it can just be applied to any other thing, like all the sort of really corny super robot shows in the 70s and like everything. There's like in every decade there was something like that. And so I just think it's just a matter of sort of digging around and finding what suits you. But the thing is, Zach, you do not like Moe at all, so it's just your personal taste. And so because that's overflowing with the market, I think from your perspective, it just seems like there's just lots of things you don't like. And I think that's what a lot of anime fans are feeling. But I think amongst those, like, there's really high-quality examples of them, but they just may not be your cup of tea. So
I will absolutely agree with that. However, I would make the argument that since it is a form that, like Mike said, invites shitty storytelling and doesn't and can be successful without having an ounce of creativity or even competence in the script, it's dangerous to an artistic an artistic medium. It's dangerous creatively.
That is true. And I guess I just don't watch things for story all that much because you have to have a really awesome story to impress me. And each time anime attempts to tell a story, I just kind of laugh. So
really? Well, why is that?
I don't know, like, I think if you're, like, let me think of the one last plot-based show I really liked. A thing that makes me laugh, Toaru Majitsu no Index. That show is just, I mean, I'm watching it, but it's, like, each story is just really bad. And it's, like, I mean, he's trying to do something, but it just, you know, doesn't work. And I think it's also because the types of stories I like are just, like, robot goes into space and destroys things, so that's that's me.
So what you're saying is that to you, there's cute girls, check, awesome. Story might be dumb, who cares?
Well, see, the thing is, it doesn't even need that. Like K-On! Doesn't have a story. It's just girls chilling out, having fun, and you know that's cool to watch if you're into that. And like Strike Witches, you know, like you watch that because the character interactions are fun and like it has like a little like a little bit of serious stuff at the end where they have to destroy something. It's a really straightforward, easy to follow story, and it's not like really bad. It's not really good, but you know, it's just entertaining, and it sort of hits certain points. But see, the thing is, my problem is like moe shows that sort of go through that checklist, but there's like no injection of heart or just like sort of effort to make you. Like, it's sort of like lowest common denominator. Like, there will be people who connect with them, but from my perspective, I think it's kind of shallow. But I'm sure you find Strike Witches shallow, so I'm not sure how this works.
Strike Witches is very well animated.
It is, yeah, that's one of the reasons why I like it. It is very well animated.
I will give it that. So here's something I wanted to posit, because I think this is my chief... My biggest problem with moe, it doesn't lend itself to creating great characters. We were talking about the sort of mechanical lack of depth that these characters have, and this was illustrated to me most recently in a very straightforward manner. I was watching Ore Imo, and sometime as like the 9th or 10th episode, there's an episode where she gets a game, an arrow game in the mail. And there's this whole sequence of her having this incredibly creepy series of reactions to these characters in the game. I don't know if you guys watched that show.
Seen all of it. I wasn't a big fan, but I watched it.
Right. And that to me was like, wow, I will never be this person. I will never respond that way to a checklist of character actions. So maybe it's like I'm just not built for it, or it doesn't appeal to me. But that to me was like the most straightforward. Oh, this is how these people are enjoying this, and I'm willing to accept it as a totally different, not bad or worse than what I'm doing, but just different from the way I consume entertainment. But it's almost alien to me.
Well, I think it definitely is different, and like I've been saying, there's good examples and bad examples. But I just think the thing is, like, as I said before, there just needs to be heart. There needs to be, like, some kind of, you know, soul behind it. Even if it's just, like, even if it's just based on established tropes, so long as you just do it with a lot of guts and lots of, you know, oomph, then I like it.
You know, what bothers me is actually almost the converse of that, or it's like what you are looking for is actually what bothers me most. Stuff like I said, that's hard to pronounce.
My own
Thank you. Stuff like that, like I think it's stupid and I think it's garbage and I can ignore it and I can roll my eyes, but it doesn't get under my skin like stuff like Air and Kanon, and I haven't seen much of Clannad, but one episode I saw of EF that I was like, I can't make it through this. I know it's supposed to be like 50 first dates and that's funny, but I can't do it because it tries to get an emotion out of me. And if it's just stupid, I can ignore it. But it's the same thing that bothers me about the Disney sitcoms, about Lifetime Entertainment. You know, I have to have a reason, and there has to be a deep, you know, kind of pull for a character to act a certain way, for me to be sad about them dying or them having some terminal disease or whatever. And in Moe, you have these characters that don't have any connection to any reality I've ever known. You know, it's like this one, okay, she likes bean buns and she likes to say gao a lot, and that's pretty much all there is to her. And she has a terminal disease, there's no reason, she just does. And then they have these big, drawn-out, beautifully animated scenes where she dies slowly or something, and it's like, and yeah, I understand people crying at that, and I go, this is wrong. I don't know what this is, you know, this is wrong. It bothers me because, you know, if it's sad, if it's moving, there needs to be a reason for it. There needs to be like, this is moving because this person has come to terms with, you know, this element of their past or this, you know, that's what I want.
Yeah, it's
so
kind of like,
I want to be beaten in the head with this big dead fish of, she says gao and it was cute, and now she's gone and she'll never say gao again.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's actually a good point. I mean, for the record, I do enjoy Aaron Kanon, and the reason why I enjoy those shows is because what he was doing, like what Maeda Jun was doing, like sort of making these really sort of cute characters that people like me like, and then sort of, you know, killing them off. That was like, I think that was kind of a new thing when that happened in like the late 90s, and then, you know, they made it into anime in the mid 2000s, and so that kind of stuff, I liked it just because it was like sort of new, weird, and interesting. But then when Planet came around, I was just like, oh, it's the same old junk. It wasn't really mixing it up. But as far as having, like, I think what you mentioned is true. Like, it needs to have, a character needs a reason for why they're acting the way they are. So that's why I like Tsukiyomi Moonphase, because Hazuki, she's, you know, she's a real brat. She's a bratty little girl. But the reason why she's that way is because she's, like, she was locked in, like, a castle her entire life, you know.
I remember Moonphase, and I remember thinking it had Moe elements, but it was probably because it was made before all the big Moe craze or whatever. And,
yeah, it was on the cusp of it. But she's sympathetic, and there's a story, and that's why I like that show. There's like that guy. I mean, the guy who writes the manga, he's a real like lolicon. But he like tries.
I would
to
never
make,
have guessed.
He tries, and Akiko Shimbo is also a lolicon too, who directed the anime. But they just inject sort of this sort of. You sympathize with her because she's been, you know, sort of had this really bizarre way of growing up, and she's still a young kid, and she honestly doesn't deserve that. So,
yeah.
And I think with some of the earlier key stuff, I think they do explain the sort of mystical deaths with mystical reasoning, and that's enough for me. But I will confess that it is kind of cheap. But
it's mythologies clashing against each other. It's six girls have six different mythologies to explain why they are the way they are, and they don't belong in the same world, and they don't have any connection to each other. So that's the sci-fi fan me going, no, this is not right.
Honestly, that when a show like that absolutely hinges on whether or not you sincerely care about these characters. When a show like that hinges on that, and I can see the strings behind these personalities, where it's very rude, it's like a crude box that they put together, like pigtails, drops things, likes bean buns, there you go. Like, when I can see the strings, I don't care about the character. I'm like, fine, if she dies, oh no, who's going to fall over and, you know, make a dumb noise? But it really hinges on you really caring about those characters, and therefore I can't get emotionally connected to it because I'm not taking it seriously because I don't give a shit if any of these little girls die. There you go. Like, that seems like that's the giant disconnect. And I think that maybe it's true for me and true for a lot of people.
Well, the best part of canon is the girl who's not magical at all. She's the cousin who's in love with her cousin, and she will never be able to admit her true feelings. And that's the best part of canon, because that's the most down-to-earth part of canon.
Yeah, and I just realized that's why Angel Beats works, actually, because you have all those tropes, but it's an afterlife situation. They're all in purgatory. It's a bunch of dead people in purgatory, and they make fun of, haha, look, this person can die over and over, so, like, you know, a lot of slapstick or whatever. But then you get to the tender moments, and everybody has a different, it's the same tropes. They're not connected. They don't necessarily belong in the same world because they could have died, you know, hundreds of years apart from each other. But, you know, there's great weight to what they did and, you know, what their personalities are like, because it's the story of their life that we're hearing, even if it has nothing to do with everybody else's lives, because they all just kind of got tossed in a bucket in purgatory. And so that's sad, and that's moving. And, you know, when they all move on or whatever, it's like, oh. So, but with canon, they're all in the same space, and they're all not real. They don't have these deep, you know, lives that build up to what they are. They are just, you know, a construction of different things that get some people off, and that's kind of creepy.
Well, I think this comes more a case of personal taste at this point.
Oh, it does, so, absolutely. Yeah. But
this all boils down to that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, but I think there are some things that are actually genuinely bad.
Of course, there's good things and bad things. We can't deny that, you know.
I'm watching a show right now that I just got from Sentai Filmworks. It actually came out this week. Some would argue that it's not truly Moe. It's just a Bishoujo deal. It's Koihime Musou. And it's basically an anime version of Romance of the Three Kingdoms, only instead of fierce warriors and generals, all the cast are cutesy-wootsy girly girls in improbable clothing.
Iki Tosen.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they don't really even have particularly pitched or enormous battles. They they fight with their spears a little. They lounge around in the bath.
And they just hang out, you know.
yeah. They chill out and they relax. And I'm kind of wondering what they're going to do with the Battle of Red Cliff. I mean, because it's just like, yeah, I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, well, there's Guan Yu, there's Zhang Fei. So these are the characters from the book, but they're wearing corsets and like.
Ooh, come sit in the bath with me and tell me about how nice my breasts look.
Yeah.
Show isn't that interesting. I'm just going to put that out there. I watched the first season and a little bit of the second one, and I think that one's a good example of just, like, no effort put in whatsoever to sort of move me emotionally and make characters that I feel are sort of emotionally, you know, compelling.
What kills me is I think, you know, having the hook of Romance of the Three Kingdoms with cute girls isn't necessarily a killer, especially if you try to make it a period piece, because, you know, unlike Ikitosin, this thing allegedly takes place in ancient China. And, you know, that could have been kind of interesting. Like, you know, like Strike Witches could have been kind of interesting if they had actually tried to have more story of the heroes of World War II that the little girls in the underpants are supposed to be.
Well, Strike Witches is more about hanging out.
Let's say chilling out.
Having a good time.
Flashing your taint at the camera, you know. All
I think
that
it's
stuff.
The cameraman's fault. I think he's the one zooming in. They're like, right. What are you doing? Nothing.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Lolicon and whether or not it's an extension of Moe, a separate thing. Did it grow out of Moe culture? I guess this is more of a question for Greg.
Oh, I wonder what... Oh, okay, well, okay, so... So Lolicon's been around forever, like, since the late 70s. Like, if you go to Mandarake, there will be old, like, manga from the late 70s that are, like, very lolly.
I was going to say, yeah, the first hentai anime was very, very lolly stuff.
Yeah, it was, like, actually called Lolita Anime or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's uncomfortable watching.
Yeah, and I think probably Moe was probably, if anything, it was probably born out of the really sort of creepy 80s lolicon culture. And I think these days, like, if you look at sort of the characters that most Moe fans, like, okay, all anime characters are underage, like, that'll always be the thing. So there's this, like, differentiation between sort of, like sort of teenager and, like, you know, Cardcaptor Sakura. And I think the characters that people like most are, like, the teenagers. And, like, I think sort of the lolicon thing is, it's sort of, you know, it's a separate, smaller thing. But I think people from the outside can't really see that because it all looks the same to them.
Are Moe fandom and lolicon fandom completely separate? Do they mix at all?
They mix. They, like, I mean, you're talking to one right here. Like, mix. But I think that if you go to Comiquettes, like Kirino from Oreimo, like, she's a young girl, but she's not like Sakura or, you know, Rin from Kodomo no Jikan. Like, so, like, that isn't lolicon. That is, like, sort of this Moe fascination, and, you know, there's a bunch of doujin of her being raped brutally, whatever. And if you go to Comiket, there's going to be lots of doujin of characters like her and sort of characters from Two Heart who are all in high school and, like, maybe late middle school. But you'll see very little, like, Kodomo no Jikan or stuff like that. I mean, the only exception is, like, Cardcaptor Sakura. And even these days, there's not much Cardcaptor Sakura because that show's, like, over 10 years old.
Right.
But back in the 90s, back when sort of maybe there was a bit more of a lolicon boom back then. But these days, I think it's more a separate thing. If you talk to Japanese fans, they will differentiate between such things. Like, someone will be, like, a lolicon, and someone will not be a lolicon. It's not like if you like Moe, you are a lolicon. It's if you like Moe, you can be a lolicon.
Right. But the two do get conflated a lot.
Yeah, I think in America, because our sort of perception of, like, youth and what adult women look like is different from Japan, since Japanese women typically look younger. So I think it's just a different perception. So that's why, you know, I mean, all the characters look young, but I think there's, like, sort of this distinct line between Sakura and, you know, Kirino.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, they don't do that when you flip the genders. They don't do that. There's a huge difference between, like, the typical man service harem lineup fans and the Shota fans. Like, he's like, oh, you like Shota. Well, this is your character, and these are ours. You know, I mean, there's a huge difference. But then again, there's a huge difference in the portrayal of the appearance of the guys. You know, you can tell which ones are older and which ones are younger much easier than the girls.
Aren't guys in yaoi manga, like, drawn very young? I mean, that's the impression I was under.
The uke is young, but not necessarily the same age. No, there's usually a huge age difference between them, and if there isn't, then
doesn't
inexplicably
work.
Look like a little girl, even if they're the same. Yeah, it's not the same. It really isn't.
Now, Hope, in shows aimed, fan service shows aimed at women, do you get the same cardboard personality constructs? Is it the same there, where it's just they have two character traits and that's supposed to be a personality?
Yes and no. Yes on the character end, and no on how the story is constructed around them, because men and women are different, and how, well, if you,
what?
I mean, there are exceptions. Really? That's like an old comedy setup or something. But no, like, you know, they talk about the male gaze and what they want, and, you know, that the eyes come first and the brain comes second or whatever. And there, it's a cliche, it's not entirely true, but that's how some of the entertainment is formed, because that they're trying to reach a broad audience. So reverse harem, it's, they have to have a deep story, or they have to have, not a deep story, but a complex story for the men. They have to give them a complex background and deeply intertwine it with the heroine's background, because that's what's sexy. It's not just how they look. They can look great. And as I say, Utena is a great example of this. They can look fantastic, and it's like, ew, I don't want that. You know, nobody wants Toga. Maybe we'll look at him, but that, he's not hot. He's kind of a repulsive fellow. So, yeah, it's a little bit different. They can't just have the trait where it's like, oh, it's cute, he likes cake, but he's tough on the outside. That can be there, but he also has to have had his mother die in a disastrous accident. That has to be there, too.
Here's a question for you, Hope. Earlier you had said that Haruhi Suzumiya, and that was kind of like a counterpart to Ouran. Like, you know, Ouran was kind of like Haruhi Suzumiya for girls. What would be like the girl version of Kanon? Would it be like La Corda Doro or something like that?
Yeah, or like Miracle Train, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
God.
wait. I take offense to that.
Shoot. I watched a little bit of this. What the devil is it called?
Oh, Urugiri wa Boku no Namae wo Shiteru?
That's one of them, yes. It's the one about it's the real new one. It aired in the summer about the samurai.
Oh, wow. Samurai? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the Shinsengumi Kitan something.
Oh, well, I know what you're talking about.
They're all over the place. There's many examples, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. It was a show that really didn't make an impact at all. It was a Jenny on Universal title about, they were like Shinsengumi vampires or something like that. Right?
Yeah, well, I don't know the exact mythos. I only watched two episodes. But yeah, I mean, there's just a bunch of examples of that. And so that's all over the place. And yeah, Ouran is the Haruhi to that, only I think it's better than Haruhi Suzumiya at both celebrating what it's parodying and being mean to it. Tamaki is a great example, because usually when you have the king character amongst all the hot boys, you have the Megane Otoko, you know, you have the glasses guy, you have the Shota, you have blah, 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 and then you have the character that you know the heroine's going to end up with, but you got to wait a little while before she comes around, and that's Tamaki. And in the fourth or fifth episode, he goes, well, obviously, guys, I'm the main character, so you can just, you know, you can back off the heroine, I'm going to get her eventually. And we go, oh, now he said that, you know, he says all, to all of them, they say, well, what are we? What if we like her? He said, you're all secretly homosexual, it's okay. And so, but then we see him and he has no success getting her at all. And we know she'll come around, so it isn't satirical. He does get her, but he's a man-child and he has no luck getting her because, you know, it's, if you had that perfect man or whatever, there'd be something wrong with him. And in his case, it is. It's like, it's a big, superficial, beautiful facade of the perfect man. And on the inside, it's like there's nothing there. And he doesn't know how to cope with reality or with a girl, the protagonist in this case, that is not like a normal girl, that doesn't wear frilly dresses and is smart. And, you know, he's the Gaston to her Belle. He can't quite process it. So it's pretty funny.
Interesting.
Well, one thing, if you excuse me, Zach, one thing I kind of want to talk about is you said, like, they have two character traits and, like, that's it. And, like, as if it was a negative, and I think that maybe this, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with sort of simple characters. I think, like I said, it's a matter of how they're, like, sort of nuanced and, like, it's sort of this mixture of sort of voice acting, character design, and sort of the writing and how you spin that. So, like, I think, I mean, all the characters in Strike Witches are completely simple. They have, like, one or two main character traits, but I think they're all, you know, lovely people, and they're great. And Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei, the whole joke with that show is that each character has one character trait. and that's what they're all about. But all those characters, they're just so like they're just so intense, and like they have a lot of things going around them. And like as Silent Sensei goes on, they like these characters have these like histories with each other that become sort of running jokes in and of themselves. So I don't think the fact that they have two character traits is a bad thing. It's just when it's sort of, you know, because you can give a character a lot of character traits and he can still be like really mixed up and stupid and boring. It's just,
well,
it's execution. That's my thing. Execution.
Well, it depends on what you're looking at. Like if you're looking at a need for them to be distinct from one another within the story and serve their own purposes, that's fine. But if you're looking for characters that are distinctly real, no matter how simple or complex they may be, because you can have completely like bwahaha evil villains that are pure evil that are still complex and feel real. Like, okay, this is the, I hate to pull a Godwin, but this is the Hitler of this story. This is the, you know. So yeah, they can have two character traits, and those two character traits are really strange. Like, oh, she likes this really nasty soda and she makes this funny noise. But that's, you know, it again, it's not a, it depends on if you're looking for a connection to reality or you're looking for, well, I've never seen that trope done this way before, or this trope and this trope together make good chemistry. You know, you're looking for two separate things.
Well, I guess the thing is, when I'm watching entertainment, I'm not looking for a connection to reality, except for when I'm reading seinen manga, then I look for a connection to reality.
See, but now, I am, so that's two different schools of thought there.
Yeah, I just want to be entertained. I want something, you know, that's... well, that's like well made, you know, like they really wanted to just make something entertaining, and that's what I'm interested in. I mean, if it
well,
is,
well, like shows are known for some pretty fantastic animation sometimes too. I mean, like Clannad has some really nicely done scenes and stuff like that. So I mean, it's nothing if not entertaining. Give that. Well,
it sounds like a lot of this, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, some of this is kind of boiling down to a comfort food scenario. Where this stuff
a little bit. I will admit that is true.
Because
that is completely true.
Because I could see the appeal if that's, but it's got to be your thing, and it's specific down to a person. This is a specific type of comfort food that a specific type of person is going to be drawn to. It's almost like bad reality. Not to compare it negatively to it, but because I watch plenty of shitty reality TV, that's my comfort food. That's what I go to when I just want to shut my brain off and just relax. And not have to think. And that's fine. That's totally fine. It's a totally valid way of consuming entertainment. But I'm getting the vibe that a lot of the moe stuff is very much comfort food. You come home after a long day at work, you just want to watch these girls hang out and chill and be cute.
Well, there's some shows I watch that are definitely straight up comfort food, like what's it? Nogizaka Horuka no Himitsu, which is a very bad show, but I like it.
It's a little like Oreimo in premise, right? Only not with a little girl. And
yeah, except in the girl and the characters are way more likable, but I think for me, like, there is some like comfort food anime, but there's also stuff like, for instance, when I'm watching a show by Studio Shaft directed by Shimbo Akiyuki, which I know you're a huge fan of, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
I think they usually put some kind of edge on what they do, and that's usually by virtue of the source material as well, and so. Basically, what I'm looking for is sort of like an interesting spin, an interesting way of displaying the material, like interesting direction, and, you know, just in a lot of the characters in Shaft shows, the material that they adapt are usually kind of more stranger than usual moe stuff. So I like that stuff because it has like this weird sort of offbeat, you know, feel to it. But there is definitely stuff I sort of turn back to when I just need my comfort food, like Strike Witches is definitely comfort food, but it's really good. Like, it's a really, like, curry is comfort food for me, and it's a really good curry. Oh my god.
Okay, interesting. Well, that's, I mean, that makes it, to me, that makes it more relatable, because I see fans vehemently defending something like, you know, Strike Witches is generally agreed upon to be of quality, but vehemently defending a show that I'll look at and say, like, wow, this is garbage. Why would anyone sit through this? They're vehemently defending it as this top quality, top shelf thing, but if it's a comfort food thing, that makes it much more relatable and more understandable to me.
Yeah, I think those people just have
defensive.
Well, see, the thing is, anime fans are very insecure people.
You don't say.
And I know, because I'm a very insecure person, but you just have to be sort of, you know, understand that everyone thinks differently, and that, you know, if you know, reviewer on Anime News Network doesn't like your show, that doesn't mean it's a bad show. There's no reason to sort of, you know, get on their throats about it. Just, you know, agree to disagree or whatever.
Well, the whole point of criticism is to discuss the arts. And that's when you internalize something to the point where you're not looking at it as a piece of art to be discussed. It's an internal thing that's important to you personally. And when someone insults it, it's like they just insulted your sister or something.
Yes. That's it.
To me, that's a dangerous, that is dangerously internalizing entertainment to me.
It is dangerous. And my Japanese isn't so great, but when I was in Japan, I didn't notice that kind of mindset amongst the Japanese fans I spoke to. Like I said, my Japanese wasn't very good, so when I lived in Japan and joined the manga circle at my school, I talked to some people, and the impression that I got through my sort of really bad Japanese was that people are really chilled out, at least amongst the fans I talked to. They're like, oh, you know, whatever. But then part of Japanese culture is just generally not saying things that will rock the boat. And if you go to 2Channel, you'll of course see that people are crazy, but again, if you talk to a Japanese person, they'll tell you that don't look at 2Channel as an accurate representation of Japanese people.
Interesting.
Well, maybe 4chan isn't an accurate representation of anime fans. Maybe all anime fans are just really chilled out and they just don't use the internet and we don't know them.
Honestly, go to a convention. No. On my personal experience, people are assholes on the internet and they're totally nice in person. I have had people scream horrible things to me online, and then I meet them at a convention, and they're really nice. They come up, they shake my hand, they say hello. It's just you're right, it's kind of just the internet. But I think when we're talking about internalizing these things, with American fans, it's a 1-2 punch of anime is my secret little thing that no one else knows about.
Anime is foreign.
Yes, too. It's a foreign
it's
thing.
It's exotic.
It's exotic. Nobody else knows. It's just me and my little fandom, so they internalize it that way. And then on top of that, they're in this fandom that feels marginalized or separate from "quote unquote" normal anime fandom, separate fandom, moe fandom. So you get this 1-2 punch there of making it feel like this is part of you that's being attacked, and that's an understandable feeling. I don't particularly like it when people get that way, but it's certainly an understandable feeling.
Well, I think it's very immature, and I think part of why moe gets the bad rap is partly because its fans are just, on the whole, terrible people. not to be a jerk, but like, the reason why I can't read many anime blogs or like read many anime forums is just because like everyone there gives me a headache because they just can't chill out and discuss these things like adults. Some of them aren't adults, and that's understandable, but some of them are adults, and that's when it becomes kind of, you know, weird.
Well,
so I think part of what gives my bad rap just the fact that like its fans aren't helping it.
While we're all in anime fandom and we're all anime fans and some of us are writers and, you know, yada yada, we see it as this big huge thing, but I don't think you can point to moe fandom as being any worse or any weirder or any more different than super mega hardcore Harry Potter fans, mega hardcore Lord of the Rings fans, people who write disgusting fan fiction about those things. And that's just the internet, and those people, I mean, good for them. They found a community that they feel welcome in, and they found people that they can relate to. I don't really think moe fandom is any different from any other form of hardcore fandom. I really don't.
No, it's the same. It's completely the same. It's just that what they like is, you know, considered weird by, like, at least normal nerd standards, because a lot of it is just about, I guess, it's just about sort of, you know, connecting with fake girls, and people think that's a really sort of weird, losery thing, and sure, it is, whatever, but, you know, some of those shows are interesting and have, you know, good characters, and, you know, whatever.
I'll admit, it's hard to separate the shows, you know, what I see in front of me, with that mental image in my head of the fans being all the same dude from that one picture of these guys with the hug pillows.
Okay, so,
right.
Got a couple of questions from Twitter here, from Yurikon, a friend of the show. She wants to know, why is the infantilization of women so appealing? Valid question.
Well, I think part of it boils down to like this difference between Japanese standards of beauty and Western standards of beauty, I guess.
Well, I don't think she's referring to appearance.
Appearance?
I think she's referring to personality. Like, a lot of the okay, really super popular moe personalities, these are not adults. These are not women. These are barely little girls.
Okay, because anime fans are misogynistic and they need to have a feeling of dominance. That's why.
Do you think that's accurate?
Some ways. I mean, you've read the stuff people post on the internet.
Yes, I have.
I just think it's cute and, you know, whatever, but I'm sure some people just think it. I mean, maybe it's a difference of perception. I don't think the girls in Strike Witches are that infantile as far as personality goes. Like, they just seem like teenagers being teenagers.
Yeah, I think the term infantile is a little bit uncharitable. And, well, I think the girls are, you know, kind of simplified because a lot of anime fandom is emotionally maybe a little immature. And that kind of characterization plays to that.
Yeah. She may just maybe specifically be thinking about, like, Kanon and all the key stuff.
Those shows specifically is what I was thinking of when she mentioned this question. Okay, from Cyrax777, I want to know this too. Why is there so much little sister incest undertones in a lot of moe shows?
Wait.
You've made comics about this, man.
Why?
Stories.
Well, some of it is that, you know, she's not a real little sister. She's like married. She's like not blood related or something. I think as part of those like sort of fantasies in general, they're like there's like kind of this lack of responsibility that makes it okay. And like some people just think it's like, oh yeah, if I had a cute little sister, I could see every day, and we'd have this like bond that we've shared since childhood. But no, don't worry, she's just adopted, but we've known each other since childhood. And then when we get it on, it'll be so much more satisfying. I mean, that's how I see it, because I have a slight sis-con, so.
But, okay, here's my question. Do you have any siblings?
I have a little brother.
Okay, but you don't have any sisters. Because I don't know nobody I know.
People who have real little sisters do not have sis-cons.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, it seems completely different.
I was going to say, yeah, that's exactly what I'd heard. Yeah. Specifically the joke of, you know, someone's like, I don't get the appeal of this. And it's like, yeah, that's because you actually have a little sister. These are only fun when you have one.
Exactly. That's right. How it works.
Interesting. Okay, from N. Thistlethwaite. She wants to know if the rise of moe and growing independence of women in Japan are linked.
You could link them if you want. Wait, do I have to take all these consultants?
You don't have to.
Am I just jumping in?
You're the expert.
you're the real fan. So I guess so. I think there's an obvious connection between not only Japan's really shitty birth rate, the phenomenon of hikikomori. These are all obviously connected. The rise of the fake girlfriend in place of having to deal with a real woman is very real. I don't think you can deny it.
Well, I don't think you can just pin that solely on anime. Like, there's a bunch of men going to hostess clubs every night.
No, no, no.
You know?
I'm not trying to say this is the only thing. I'm just saying there is an obvious connection.
I think there's a bunch of things at work here. And I think when people say that stuff, they kind of pinpoint anime and don't look at the whole big picture.
Well, obviously, it's a huge social problem there, and not just anime.
It is a whole huge social problem. And I mean, I guess you could link them. I just think, I think it's
one part of a much bigger thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think zeroing on sort of moe anime as the reason why the birth rate's declining is like not.
Well, no,
much.
But no one's saying that. I don't think anyone's saying that. That wouldn't be accurate. Otaku Review, we discussed this a little bit, but he wants to know if moe is just a trope or has it become its own genre? If it's its own genre, at what point did it cross that line? Hope, why don't you take this one?
I think moe can be many genres, and it's both. Like, I have to use two words for it. Like, I can be moe about many things that are not moe, and it's a purely subjective thing, which is a lot of moe, and what we've been talking about is purely a matter of taste. But I had to switch it into like what I call moe slice of life, or moe comedies and moe dramas. And moe dramas is the sad girls in the snow. It's the varied tropes that usually involve one guy instead of, you know. And then the moe comedies are like your Azudai and your Lucky Star, and they're plotless instead of being like driven by a plot, no matter how weird or poorly written. They're just kind of, you know, they're the comfort food, you know. And then there's others, though. There's even more that are emergent. So I think it's many genres. I don't know.
Well, I think in Japan, moe, like, I think in America, we've kind of made it into a genre because it's very easy to
explain its existence.
Yeah, but I think moe first started off as a feeling, and the way you describe people who like moe characteristics are moe kei. And sometimes when I speak Japanese, since I speak Japanese badly, I say moe kei anime, and I'm not sure if that's what you should actually say, and I'm not sure if that means the genre or if that means it's anime that moe kei like, because moe kei just means like person who likes moe. And I think it's more like, I don't think it's a genre so much as it's a quality inherent in genres such as, you know, Iyashike anime and, you know, Kukike or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. Just like in Yonkoma anime, all these things.
What that's bringing to my mind, Greg, is describing some of the music we dig, like Pizzicato 5, Fantastic Classic, as Shibuya-kei. Now, if you listen to Shibuya-kei artists, they don't sound alike. They don't sound that much alike at all. It wasn't so they sound like each other as a it's they share similar inscrutable qualities.
Yes. Like I tried to listen to some Cornelius and I didn't dig it at all. So who knows? Yeah, it's just they're coming from like the same way of thinking. That's
The Japanese don't do genres like we do either. So maybe it's a genre in the West or it's erroneously a genre in the West, so we can just look at it and scorn all of it. But the Japanese don't do genres like we do them. They kind of have them, but it's not the same at all.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something that has turned into a genre in the West, just so we could describe to non-fans what the hell they were looking at.
I had to explain Magical Girlfriend to somebody recently. They're like, "What is like? Oh my God, it's Chobits!" And I was like, I don't want to explain this. Well, do you know what Yamato Nadeshiko is? No. Oh, I have to explain this.
Come on, if they don't know Magical Girlfriend, they're not going to know Yamato Nadeshiko.
Yeah, I know. Well, he was a big nerd, too, so it was a little bit, there's a connect there, but it wasn't strong enough. So yeah, it is difficult. This is just like, so we have to go, well, that's moe in the West, because we don't inherently know it, you know? Like, they can use it in commercials in Japan, everybody knows what it is.
And I think using moe as a genre in American writing has been abused, because I think it just gets thrown around, sometimes to describe something people don't like. And I think, you know, I think maybe it's calmed down now, or maybe just because I haven't been reading anything anime-related lately, but I think it's kind of gotten out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to just lump everything you don't like into moe. I you know, personally don't write about moe shows unless I have to for the preview guide, because there's rules about the preview guide where if I get to a show first, I have to do it. But there's five other guys writing about it, too, so my opinion
isn't
the only one.
That sounds dangerous, man.
Yeah, it is. I just decided, look, I clearly don't like this stuff. I'm not going to write about it because my audience doesn't want to hear from me on this subject. They want to hear from someone who is the audience for this show.
And because you're going to get the same review each time because it's just not your thing.
That's true. At the same time, I would argue having someone who just unconditionally loves all of it is just as invalid.
Yeah, like, that is just as bad. That's
just
true.
Just as bad. But I try to find a middle ground. That's why I have so many different critics writing for me. But I think it has died down a lot, and I think that is related to the fact that I believe we've all just kind of gotten used to it at this point. It was sort of new 6 years ago. Now it's like, well, it's part of it. Deal with it. Like, it's part of it now. We can't get away from it. And if you can't just adapt, you're not going to stick around too much longer. So, yeah, I think by and large, anime fandom is just used to it. It's just expected now. I mean, there's plenty of shows out there that I like that have moe elements in them, but it's not overwhelming. It doesn't overwhelm the show.
I think you can track the sort of people getting used to it and people freaking out over it by listening to Anime World Order archives. And the points of the shows where Daryl is really freaking the fuck out about moe are the times when everyone else was. And you realize nowadays he's just like, whatever. It sucks.
Well,
move
there
on.
Was a time between like 2006 and I think 2008 when moe was just this thing and we were all kind of waiting for it to go away. Like maids. Like, remember when maids was really big and there had to be like three or four shows with maids every season?
Yeah.
I don't think it's growing as much anymore.
No.
I don't think it's declining, but it's not as explosive as it was.
No, this is sort of our next question. Lamar Kellywood is asking, do you think moe heavy anime is going to fall by the wayside as a fad, or will it continue to thrive as a common aspect? I think the closest parallel you can draw, like Mike said, is maids. 6 years ago, there were four shows a season that had fucking maids in them, and now there's like two, you know, a maid will pop up in a harem somewhere, there'll be a maid show a year. Yep.
That's all about maids,
right?
And detectives.
But there aren't 10 of those shows this season.
Yes,
there's one. You know, I think moe is going to become part of the big giant melting pot that is the way anime is written, and it'll be tossed in there every now and then. And you'll get like one show a season that will have super heavy moe elements and be constructed like a visual novel being turned into a TV show or whatever. That will exist, but I think the boom years for it might be over.
Well, I guess one way to figure that out would be, at what point did you see super robot shows dying down? And at what point did you see, like, robot shows in general dying down? At one point did you see, like, whatever kind of anime defined the 90s? I don't know what kind of anime defined the 90s.
Well,
when did you see that dying down?
You can point to, like, 2000 to 2002 to when giant robot shows started dying out. And we still get giant robot shows, but you only get maybe one a year.
Yes.
So they're kind of rolling through these genres, these tropes, these cliches, whatever you want to call them. When one becomes popular, they just start throwing it into everything. And then when that dies down, they move on to the next thing. But the big panic in Japan right now, according to animators, people who work there, the big panic right now is they don't know what the next thing is.
Yes.
So we don't have the next thing yet. It's still moe.
I think the next thing is going to be found in doujinshi. Like, what's his face? Ryukishi 7 and, you know, all his, you know, visual novels that are like murder mysteries. And, you know, all the different kinds of Toho doujinshi that all cover a wide variety of genres, like action, comedy, drama, romance, whatever. I think where I see moe going is that they're just going to keep trying to mix it up more with more, like, you know, just trying to mix it up and sort of spice it up some more. And that's what I'm seeing, at least in the doujin scene.
Yeah,
so much about the pro scene.
I am very surprised that there hasn't been an attempt at, like, some big, lavish Toho anime. Is there some sort of rights situation there?
My sister loved that stuff.
The thing is that Toho is not really owned by, like, Azune owns it, I guess, but it's not, he doesn't have a copyright over it. And they are making a professional Toho anime, but it's like a tie-in with Anime Tenshou for, like, gamers or whatever.
You know, I wonder what's on the rise is fan works in that regard too, because Toho,
probably.
What I've seen, is all about fan interaction and creation. Like, they create the franchise. It's a big fangirl monster. I mean,
I definitely feel like if you go to a con this summer, you're going to find more people who are familiar with, like, with Toho or with Fukireta or with some kind of internet anime based meme than they are with what's actually coming out in Japan at the time.
Look at,
like,
there was
people in my manga club in Japan who didn't watch much anime, but they were, like, all about Nico Video, and they were like, yeah, I'm all about Toho and Vocaloid, all that stuff. You know? But they didn't watch much anime.
And at the same time, the anime industry in Japan is moving towards more theatrical stuff, one-offs. So maybe it's sort of going back to its fetal state creatively. Oh, I think that's great. I would love for it to kind of blow up and be reborn. That would be great.
That for years. The anime industry needs to die so it can be reborn and be better than it was.
And, you know, that sort of thing is going to happen gradually anyway, no matter how you cut it. And I think that may be what we're seeing now that we're at the end of the moe train, as it were, or at least that's what it appears. Maybe they're going to really have to just restart. That's interesting. So from ABCB Tommy wants to know, is my neighbor Totoro moe? If not, why not? And if so, how is it distinct from the industry-ravaging plague in terms of themes, art, directional choices, etc.?
Well, Totoro is Lolicon, obviously. It's some, big creepy guy. He lives in a forest.
Hi, everybody.
You know, he's luring young kids in to his... I mean, come on. It's...
Stop making the babies cry.
I think my neighbor Totoro obviously has a sense of sincere and obvious innocence to it that takes it out of the fetish category. I guess you could look at it that way. Obviously not created to be that.
Totoro's smile will never be pure again.
We know. Miyazaki's a weird dude. Come on. He's a really weird dude.
Remember that quote that they used to open my part of the show.
Exactly. I think there's truth in the... I mean, it probably is. Before they had a word for it, it definitely taps into the same kind of feelings, you know.
Well, I wouldn't look at Mei and Satsuki from Totoro so much, but look at some of his earlier characters. Look at Nausicaa. I think, there's a crumb of that appeal in there.
Someone in Colony Drop noted that Nausicaa does not wear any panties.
Yeah, she wears flesh-colored tights or whatever.
I was going to say, it's an optical illusion. It's a hilarious optical illusion, but... optical illusion nonetheless.
That's a really old, really old canard. Okay, from Dr. Osaka, who's more annoying, Moe Otaku or North American fanboys?
Wait, are Moe Otaku different from North American fanboys?
I'm not sure.
Americans are allowed to be louder.
Are you talking about Japanese fans?
I think he's talking... Actually, specifically, I think he's talking about American Moe Otaku and American fanboys, like Star Wars fanboys, comic book fanboys, Transformers fanboys, that kind of thing.
It's all the same shit. That's how I see it.
That's a good answer.
I mean, you could argue, like, which group is more willing to accept horrible, mediocre crap?
I would pin it on both of them.
I think they're both, they both have the same annoying character traits. It's just, personality traits rather.
I think there is
just as annoying.
There is something about someone who is super rabid and wants to also get into the conversation about it, which is where the problem starts. You really can't have a conversation with someone who's super rabid. Oh, finally. Okay. Finally, this is an interesting question from Stab Kid. He wants to know, have you ever seen a case of where a hardcore Moe fan started dating someone and continued to be a hardcore Moe fan?
Densho, Toko, that doesn't count.
That's fake.
Yeah, that was a real 2chan thread, definitely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but nobody knows if it's true, so.
No, it's not true. But I can't say I know anyone. Actually, I do know a guy. He's not a hardcore Moe fan, but he likes Strike Witches, and he has a girlfriend. But he's a general-purpose nerd, too, so that doesn't really count. There's, like, manga artists who, like, have girlfriends, like Dance of the Vampire Bund guy. He has a girlfriend. But, yeah, I don't know.
Is she 10?
I don't know anybody offhand. Well,
wasn't there some kind of otaku dating service started as, like, kind of an adjunct to a K-On! Tourist junket?
Oh, was there? Maybe.
I think it was. It's on Anime News Network. Like, there was some kind of otaku match service, and predictably there were like 900 dudes and about 30 women.
Yeah, but I remember seeing that. Yeah,
there were like 6 or 7 couples that went out on a blind date and were like, "Yeah, this could work." So just like, "Hey, success."
The thing is, like, there are a lot of, you know, like, pretty attractive, like, female anime fans. So, like, I mean, I don't think, and, you know, they're nice people. I mean, I guess it's a matter of the guys not being complete weirdos. And I'm talking about myself here, too, so...
Well, some guys... I mean, some people have internalized the subculture to the point where they have arguments over what's better, 2D or 3D,
That's kind of silly.
Which is...
Know?
It's silly, but I can see somebody becoming so obsessed with a hobby or a fetish or something like that, that it does... You know, they go through a phase where they're like...
Yeah,
I can definitely see
that. That's a pretty cool phase.
That is universal. Like, you can't hold up a good relationship with that kind of obsession over pretty much anything.
Well, I think particularly when your obsession is fake girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I think there is something special about this particular thing, but yeah.
Well, I have an example. I don't know if this guy has a girlfriend, but I met this guy in Japan, and he has a bunch of Dakimakura, like I do, and we bonded over that. But at the same time, this guy dresses very fashionably, and he, you know, on his Mixi, he either writes about which girl in Strike Witches he wants to be his wife, and what cool shoes he bought. And he can talk to women really easily, and, like, without, like, being a complete, like, Spurg Lord. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Interesting.
So. All I can think about is I used to know a guy years ago. I don't talk to him anymore, but I remember specifically him complaining that he started dating a girl and was taking her home to his apartment, and he had to take all of his Cardcaptor Sakura posters down so she wouldn't see them.
A smart move.
I don't know how that worked out, but...
Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up. This has been a very enlightening conversation, and I want to thank you all for coming on and fleshing all this stuff out. It's a... Certainly a touchy subject, but I think we got to some truth here, and I thank you all very much.
Oh, it's been
thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
Okay, that's our show. I want to thank the panel for joining me. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you all next week.